Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. Learn more at nm.org/better.
Dr. Sterling Elliott is kind enough to come in the first Monday of every month and answer your questions. He is a clinical pharmacist at Northwestern Medicine, assistant professor of orthopedics at Feinberg School of Medicine. He joined us last week to check in on the blood pressure drug recall. Can you recap that for us, Doc?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. It's great to be here. It's always a pleasure to join everybody. If you remember last week, we talked about a drug called Prazosin. The brand name for it is Miniprez, although I think at this point most people are taking that generic version. And that's a drug that had a couple of different strengths. One manufacturer recalled here. And so I think, you know, whenever we look at recalls, we sort of assess the impact, and a lot that has to do with the impact is what's the volume of the drug, either whether it's a brand name or it's a generic name, and where does it fit and how much is it likely to impact. And so, you know, I think for Prazosin, it's one of those drugs that tends to be added on later in the course of treating high blood pressure. And so there's a segment of the population that's affected. But fortunately, there's other generic manufacturers that have products in place that should be able to supplement that issue with the one manufacturer.
And Gary from Morton Grove sent in a text about something you already reached out to me about, Sterling, and that is the recall on some batches of generic atorvastatin.
Yeah.
Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, generic atorvastatin. I saw Gary's text, and I saw another text from someone else out in the 815 area. And that's one that, you know, you and I talked about a little bit earlier before the show. That's one to me that's really high on the radar screen. Atorvastatin is the generic for the popular brand name medication Lipitor. And I think we all know that as probably one of the top of mind drugs that's related to a statin. And those are the drugs that help control the amount of cholesterol your body makes. And so when something like generic atorvastatin, the generic for Lipitor, goes out on a recall, and in this case, this recall is related to one manufacturer in particular. The company is called Ascend Labs, and it covers the different strengths of the drug that they make. I think 10, 20, 40, and 80 milligram strengths, and so those are all strengths that are commonly used in patients. When that happens, the impact of it can be far greater, right? Because you've got a very large segment of the population that's using it. And so now you're looking to have to supplement with other manufacturers. And that could really sort of put a strain on the marketplace.
Okay. Let's get to the phones because some people have been waiting for a while. Let's go to line one. I know that you have a question for Dr. Elliott. Rob, what is it?
Is it Rob? Is that who you're talking?
Yep. You go right ahead and ask him your question.
My question is about long-term use of a particular antidepressant. I believe it's called Serotin. And is there any way to pharmaceutically screen my blood or my system to tell me if I'm getting therapeutic value out of it?
Well, I think you're probably talking about the drug sertraline, which is the generic, which is a popular generic drug out there that we use as an antidepressant. You know, looking at drug levels with the antidepressants isn't a very common thing that we'll do. I think for the most part, we look at how are you doing in terms of managing your depression versus what kind of side effects, if any, are you experiencing. And so I think if generally what we're getting when you're talking with your doctor is that your depression is well managed and you're not experiencing some of those, you know, concerning side effects that we're looking at, then in general, whether or not you've got a therapeutic level of the drug in your blood doesn't necessarily alter the course of the way we treat things. I mean, one of the things we're taught all the time, and nurses are taught this, physicians are taught this, pharmacists are taught this. If you're going to go ahead and take somebody's blood and get a level, make sure that there's something you're going to do about it. And so in this case, really, we look more at what's the clinical effect on a patient.
Okay, let's go to line three. Dennis, thanks for hanging in there. What's your question for Dr. Elliott?
Hi, Dr. Elliott. I have been prescribed Losartan because I had high blood pressure for a long, long time.
Yeah.
But several months ago, the blood pressure went away because I had an accident and I had some surgery. So I have not been taking Losartan. But yesterday, when I was leaving the hospital, they insisted that my potassium level was borderline low. So I got the injection, which hurt, really. That's, you know, potassium is not a fun shot. So
no, I mean, injections. Yeah, no, potassium certainly, you know, potassium certainly can burn a little bit. There's no question about that. When patients get potassium, it can burn. But, you know, potassium levels are one of those things, that we're really pretty vigilant about, right? Because your potassium level is really critical to establishing good quality heart function. It establishes the rate at which your heart will beat and the ability for your heart to beat. And so when those potassium levels go off, it's one of those things that we really want to address pretty immediately.
All right. Good luck. Thanks for calling, Dennis. Hey, I sent you that article, Dr. Elliott, about copycat drugs. What is the difference between a copycat and a generic?
Well, it's sort of a semantic term, right? And I think it's one of those terms that's sort of thrown out there, maybe with a little bit of an underlying agenda on it. A generic drug is essentially the active ingredient, the active molecule in whatever drug you've been taking. And, you know, when it's first brought to the market, a drug manufacturer gives it a brand name and they have some exclusive time to sell it. When that ends, the generic drugs start to come in. You start to get competition in the market for the same item. And so you drive down prices. What we've seen with the rise of the biologic drugs, and those are a lot of those things that maybe you see ending with like NIB, N-I-B, or MAB, M-A-B. When they first came out, of course, they're very expensive medications that take a lot of money to develop and a lot of money to manufacture. So in an effort to drive down cost, we've seen other manufacturers get into manufacturing medications that have the same active effect, and they may differ a little bit. And what that does is it introduces a generic-like competition scenario. And so that's where we're getting this term copycat. I think maybe the manufacturers of some of the original brand name drugs like to kind of present it that way in an effort maybe to be able to drive business back toward their original products.
All right. More questions coming up about glaucoma, hemophilia, and we'll talk about Walmart now offering you the weight loss drug Zepbound. That's all with Dr. Sterling Elliott after the news. Next with Steve on 720 WGN.
2:39 here on the Lisa Dent Show. Okay, Kev, I've given you a little time. Have you figured out that quantum question yet? The governor is very proud of his work in quantum products in Illinois, and there's a summit here, and well, he said that we're going to have a quantum microelectronics park. I can't even say it.
Yeah.
That
one's just
Dr.
Slipping.
Elliott, can you help with that?
Can I help with a quantum electronics park?
Well, don't repeat the question.
Well,
give me an answer.
Steve, I don't know if I can help it, but I'll certainly be willing to try.
There's Dr. Sterling Elliott is with us, a clinical pharmacist at Northwestern Medicine and an associate professor, too, at the Feinberg School. I know you've got some more questions to answer, right?
Yeah, I believe we still have a lot of folks bringing us in. I think one of the things that's come through the text line here, and Lisa talked about it before we went to break, one of our texters is asking us about the cost of hemophilia drugs, and it, being told, she said she'd heard as much as $40,000 per month. I will tell the audience that a lot of the costs of this vary widely, but they are costly. And one of the reasons that they're so costly, and that's really the question that was asked here, is that these are drugs that are designed to mimic some of the clotting factors in your body. Hemophilia is a disease where you lose some of those clotting factors and the functionality of it. And so this sort of replaces it. And they're often engineered in a way to take care of that. And so all of those production costs that go into doing that and maybe refining them from human origin products go into making that cost so extensive. So that's why we see that. I think one of the other things that Lisa had talked about was one of our texters is asking about being recently diagnosed with glaucoma symptoms. Mm-hmm. And so she's asking about the possibility of eye vitamins. And what I'll tell the audience is that we see a lot of advertising about eye vitamins. And you know, certainly I think those are helpful, we know, for general eye health. But what I want the audience to understand is that glaucoma is really an illness that comes from a specific problem with the network in the front of your eye that drains the fluid out from the back through the front and then allows you to basically blink it out. And so when that drainage system gets clogged, for lack of a better term, you got to figure out different ways to open it. Vitamins probably aren't going to help that tremendously, and so that's really going to mean we're going to start down the pathway of different eye drop medications.
Is an eye vitamin something you swallow or drop into your eye?
Swallow.
No, you swallow them. They tend to be pills that are out there to swallow, and you see them often in the vitamin aisles in a pharmacy that you go to.
When you watch ads for drugs on TV or online or things like that, do you pull your hair out?
Well, Steve, I don't have much hair to pull out. So, you know, it, for me, that's not so much a functional concern, right? I mean, at some point in my earlier existence on this planet, yeah, it drove me a little nuts. I think, you know, you look at some of those things and you think about the way they work. And so what I think is really important for a lot of the audience to understand is when you see those advertisements, you'll notice that they don't make specific claims about things they help. They can't. FDA doesn't allow that. It's what the FDA calls a structure function claim. And so if you want to start making one of those, then you need to take it to FDA and get it approved as a drug. So you'll see they'll talk about things like supporting health and things like that.
Dr. Sterling Elliott is with us. You know him as the clinical pharmacist at Northwestern Medicine and the assistant professor of orthopedics at Feinberg School of Medicine. I know that question on the text line about melatonin and heart failure. They mm-hmm. said they just saw something connecting those two. Have you seen anything about that, or
No, I have. You know, I saw that question on the text line when we got started, and I think this is a really good one to address here. And the reason I think it's so important to address is that there was a study that was done out of the East Coast that took a look at people that they identified as long-time melatonin users. And one of the things that they looked at epidemiologic data. So that's essentially that's looking at what kinds of incidence rates do you see of certain conditions. And they found that they believe they're seeing a higher incidence rate. I think it's about 3.5 times that of folks taking melatonin having a heart failure condition as opposed to those who don't. But I think what's really important here, and I think it's very, very important here in light of some of the things we've seen in the last 6 weeks out in this country, is that I want everybody to be very, very cautious about drawing conclusions about cause when all we're really seeing is links. And so one of the things that's important here, and the authors of this study talk about it in the reporting, is to note that they've seen this connection, and there may be merit to finding out at what degree this actually happens. We know that sleep pattern breaks often cause changes in blood pressure, and that can lead to heart failure. But if you notice what I'm talking about here, at no point am I telling you this will do this, we know this does this. And I think that's really, really important for us to think about right now in light of everything that we've heard.
Okay, we've got one last question before we let you go. That is the person on line one. What's your question for Dr. Elliott?
I was just concerned. I'm on omeprazole, 40 milligrams once daily, and I've been on it long term. And I'm just worried about the side effects and like dementia that I've heard or other side effects.
It's a good question. I think those types of drugs, those are called the proton pump inhibitors, and they help control some of that overproduction of stomach acid. I think some of that is out there. But again, like we were just talking about, it's a great follow-up question. A lot of those things are things that have been observed, but at this point, I don't think there's anybody that's demonstrated a significant connection. So I would watch those things. I would certainly have those conversations with your physician. But at this point, I wouldn't say that we've got a connection there.
Oh, good okay. news. It's always a concern whenever you're on a drug for a long period of time and you worry, like, what impact is this going to have on my life later on? And we always appreciate you addressing those. Thank you for coming in today, Dr. Elliott.
You bet. It was a pleasure. And, Steve, it was a pleasure to join you one more time. Good. The best of luck to you.
Oh, I appreciate it.
In retirement. I am so jealous of you.
well, you know, Sterling has listened to this radio station since he was a kid. And I know that you wrote a long text, or was it an email, Sterling, that you wanted to forwarded to Steve?
You know, I sent Steve an email. Steve, I don't know if you got it. I wasn't sure if I had the right address. But, you know, Steve, 40 years at the 50,000-watt blowtorch of love, shout out to Spike, is, you know, it's a tremendous accomplishment, my friend. And, you know, you're one of those voices that is part of the fabric of this radio station, part of the fabric of this city. I was in Florida for about 6 years in between 10 years here in Chicago. And I'm going to tell you, my friend, I remember popping on WGN early on when I was, you know, back in town and thinking, there's Steve Bertrand's voice. And it's a voice that I associated with this station for a very long time. And I think a lot of our listeners do. And it's just fantastic that you shared your talent with us for so long.
Well, that's very kind of you, Doc. I appreciate it. And I could only do it because people like you were willing to listen. So thank you.
Well, we were, and yeah. We loved it. We're going to miss you. And there'll be another iconic voice that emerges, I'm sure.
Well, I hope not. I mean, I hope I'm.
You hope you're the very last one?
Right. They'll forgive me in 6 weeks. Don't worry about that.
Thanks, Dr. Elliott.
You bet.